This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge these people's ongoing connection to land, waters, and culture. Sovereignty was never ceded. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello and welcome to Auspol Snack Pod, the podcast where we serve you up bite-sized chunks of Australian politics and news with a side of crispy memes, and the official podcast of the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, which you can find at facebook.com/groups/Auspol Shitposting. My name's Noon, aka Ino Funkenstein. I'm the admin and creator of Auspol Shitposting, and with me is my co-host,
Zach the Snack. Hey, what's up, Noon?
Hey, Zach.
Thanks
how
for
you doing?
That extremely concise description of how to find the group.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We've already had at least one person find the group from the podcast instead of the other way around, so that's exciting.
Yeah, hey, what's up? And we know who you are. You want to get into it?
Yeah, so this week for our entree, we're looking at Friendly Geordies and Clive Palmer.
Two of my absolute most favorite meme merchants.
They are both, yeah, meme lords, meme cultivators, working, toiling in the meme fields. So... Clive Palmer has threatened to sue Friendly Geordies for defamation because Friendly Geordies has called him, quote, Fatty McFuckhead and a dense Humpty Dumpty. This is just like classic Clive trying to sue the shit out of everybody because he's got more money than them and he can make it fucking difficult for them. And I'm not a big Friendly Geordies fan. He's a bit
of a
jerk.
Yeah, I just want to go on the record real quick and say fuck that guy as well.
Yes. He is significantly less bad than Clive Palmer, though.
Yes. Extraordinarily low bar to clear.
It is. But
even an avowed Labour hack like Friendly Geordies clears it
pretty
with
comfortably.
Aplomb.
With yeah. daylight between, yeah. Jordan Shanks has done a... like 20-minute video about this defamation case, which is quite entertaining. And, you know, he sort of starts off by being like, Clive, I'm a millennial. Bankruptcy doesn't scare me. I don't have any assets, which is a pretty good joke.
Yeah, I've
and relatable.
Begrudgingly chuckled a number of times, but I just wish that he hadn't built like a solid 50% of the jokes in the video around fat shaming.
100%.
Like, there's just so much to make fun of Clive Palmer, such as the fact that he's suing you for calling him a dense Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah.
That's fucking comedy gold. You just don't need to... You don't
do
need
the
to
fat jokes.
With the fat stuff.
Yeah.
But whatever. This is a clash of annoying titans.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I like that. We should make a documentary about this whole situation called Clash of the Annoying Titans. Yeah. Cool. Well, I think that's probably enough about both of these two stalwarts of Australian political culture.
I don't know if we have much of a take to tie this together beyond it's dumb and therefore extremely representative of Australian political discourse.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
For another contributor to our, annoying titans of Australian politics, we've got a shitpost of the week, Zach.
Shitpost of the week.
Yeah, and this is a case of, I've made this joke probably like, I don't know, almost every episode on this podcast, but there's shitposts and there's shitposts. And this is definitely the latter. So this week, a video was put out by our favorite libertarian think tank, the IPA, the Institute for Public Affairs.
There's so many good ones to choose from, but they really are number one.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to pick from your favorite shadowy puppeteering organization who writes the government's policies for them. But I don't think you can go past the IPA. And that's for a number of reasons, but the main one is that they seem to be run entirely by 22-year-old white boys doing their best impersonation of a wet Frankfurt. They're like, I don't know how everybody in the IPA is a literal child, but every time they put something out, I'm like, how are you, like, how are you old enough to be legally allowed to operate a fucking video camera? Like, I don't understand.
What's the name of that dude we talked about last time who's a literal child?
Caleb Bond.
Caleb Bond.
Yeah.
He
strong
looks
Caleb
like,
Bond vibes.
Like an elder statesman compared to the dude in this video.
He's they like fucking, they call him Grandpappy. Grandpappy Bond. Okay, we're getting off track here. The IPA, Institute of Public Affairs, who write a whole bunch of liberal policies and in general are a collection, a cluster of right-wing libertarian fuckwits, have put out a video by one of these young sausage boys called... That's probably... Can I say sausage boys?
Just call them wieners.
They put out a video by this little wiener called Kurt Wallace. In this video,
of course
it's a
Kurt Wallace.
Kurt Wallace. Yeah, of course. And it's a video called Regulatory Dark Matter, in which Kurt Wallace, over the course of about 2 poorly green-screened minutes, goes into a small amount of detail describing a new research paper that he's done for the IPA. Basically talking about how businesses are massively overregulated by red tape.
That's
that
the problem
is
with the banking sector, Zach. Not enough regulation.
Oh, I think time and time again we've seen
if you just let businesses regulate themselves.
The continued corruption and rotting of their customers is just a cry for help.
Flammable
really.
Cladding? Too much regulation.
it's the main problem here. So yeah, it's basically a little libertarian rant about how regulators shouldn't have the ability to regulate. It should only be legislation directly passed by parliament that should have the ability to have an impact on what businesses are and aren't allowed to do. And like, he also hates government dictating what businesses do as well, because he's a libertarian sausage. So anyway, this video is just fucking amazing. Like the shabbiness of the production quality, his absolute lack of charisma.
He's behind the eyes. It's
he
impressive.
He talks about how...
Like an actual mannequin would probably be more charming and...
Yeah,
verdant.
Like in that... like that tourist attraction that they have on Kelly Country, where they like, it's like from the 80s, and the immersive experiences, they have mannequins with blank faces that they then project like a video of a face onto. This dude kind of reminds me of that. I'll just play a short clip where he tells you exactly where the term regulatory dark matter comes from.
Because these regulatory actions aren't debated in Parliament and aren't covered by the media, we don't see them. That's why I call them dark matter. No light shines in them.
God, it makes me so angry.
I love it. It warms my cockles, because these guys are the fucking vanguard of right-wing thinking in this country. Yeah, this is the best they could find. And that's why
pisses me off.
This shit is amazing.
I'm a huge science nerd, and he clearly has no fucking idea about what dark matter is. They sort of have this image of a black hole, which is not dark matter, with like purple lightning going on, also not dark matter. And then he's like, we need to shine a light on it. And the whole point of dark matter is it doesn't interact with light. That's really not the most reprehensible thing in the video, but it really... Got my goat.
You should definitely go and watch it, if only to witness the part where he talks about how he's like calculating the amount of regulation that has been produced by a couple of regulators, and he's like, if you printed it all out and stacked it on top of each other, it'd be twice as tall as me, and it would take 40 weeks to read.
which is ridiculous, like, because government employs more than one person. So it's not actually...
No, it's just Kurt.
40 weeks. It's just Kurt.
And
I mean, that's the IPA
and
dream,
and
is that
the
there's only one employee
now.
And it's them. But, like...
Like, yeah, I 100% feel like this is Kurt trying to justify to his bosses why it took him
40 weeks
an entire
to
year to produce
this
two-minute YouTube video.
Also, look, we really need to move on, but also, there's just so much good shit in this. But
The
end, he's like, if this trend continues unchecked... It will reduce productivity. And, like, he couldn't actually find any evidence that it had already affected productivity, right? Because if he had, he would have said that. Instead, he's like, according to my bullshit logic, this is probably going to be bad. And, like, that's the most damning conclusion he could get, other than, like, it tall.
But, and so, like, on the one hand, it's hilarious because it's terrible and these people, like, the fact that this is the best they could do is just, like, does warm my heart, as I said. But, like, these people go on Sky, like, this dude goes on Sky News regularly to talk about how minimum wage is too high and shit like this. Like, these people, they are fucking ridiculous, and anybody who, like, isn't already a liberal shill is obviously going to dismiss them as idiots, but they actually wield a huge amount of power behind the scenes.
There's also some fucked stats that I haven't looked up, but that, like, the ABC, something like 60% of their guests are IPA-affiliated but not mentioned. It's really horrendous. Yeah. Don't quote me on that figure. I'll look it up for the bonus episode next week.
Yes. But my point was that the IPA actually are dangerous, and by taking the piss out of them, we're doing activism, so you can't tell us that we're just wasting our time here. Okay, cool. Next segment.
Okay, this next segment is a lot less funny. This is about police brutality and general shittiness towards First Nations people. This week, a Noongar woman whose name is Keenan Dickey was assaulted and robbed on Saturday last week, and she went to the cops to report it, basically. And the police told her that she had outstanding fines, and then they arrested her while she was waiting to report the assault against her. And she spent a night in jail, which is a really horrendous law that basically says every night in jail takes off $250 from the fines that you owe, which is...
This is a Western Australian law.
This is Western Australia, yeah. This is where this happened, in Perth. And it's just so awful that, I mean, I'm personally not under any illusion that the police are interested in helping people, but they are supposed to be, and it's just so fucked that someone with a broken rib who'd been assaulted and robbed came to them for help and protection, and instead they arrested her for fines.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking dark stuff. So this is reminiscent of a case from about 5 years ago, also in Western Australia, of a woman, Indigenous woman called Miss Du, who was arrested for having unpaid fines and who died as a result of injuries sustained, I think, while she was being arrested, or definitely caused by the cops. And in the wake of that, Western Australia kind of set into motion trying to repeal some of these laws that put people in prison for having unpaid fines. And that is now just starting to come into effect 5 years later. So that was like a cool step forward on this issue. And then as I started to read about it, it was like
less good development.
Yeah, it got less good. It's like you know, any story about any
how
step forward for
you First know, Nations yeah. people in Australia.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you start to pull the thread a little bit, and then it turns out that, okay, so they're going to imprison people less for unpaid fines, but they're introducing a law that means that they can force people's employers to garnish their wages for unpaid fines, or even dock their Centrelink payments
and
in order
just
to pay
like
the money
take
back.
Lump sums of cash out of their bank account.
Yeah, at will.
And
which
they
is...
can also issue a thing called a work and development permit, which is basically forced unpaid labor in order to pay the fine, and or forced rehab, and in sort of like worst case scenarios, they can still imprison people. So
yep. So yeah. They're still leaving that door open for themselves. So while we wanted to draw attention to the kind of this small positive step that is being taken by the Western Australian government to stop imprisoning people as much for unpaid fines, it's important to acknowledge how much work still needs to be done there. But it's not, you know, it's important to recognize the work that has been done in order to get to this point. So to that end, we wanted to draw attention to an organization called Sisters Inside, which has been around since the early 90s. And they advocate for women in prison, in mostly in Western Australia, but I think
First
the rest
Nations
of the country.
Women in prison.
First Nations
right?
women specifically, yeah. And recently they have started crowdfunding to pay off the fines of women who are First Nations women who are imprisoned for unpaid fines. And they've raised in total almost $500,000 and have gotten, I think it's at least dozens, if not hundreds of women out of jail by paying off their fines through crowdfunding.
And they've paid off the fines of a lot more women than that as well, who weren't in jail and now won't be because of that.
Yeah, exactly. So they do great work. And actually, in the case of Keenan Dickey, it was them who was contacted by a security guard at the prison after she was incarcerated. And this guard called them and let them know what was going on. And they actually facilitated her release. So she didn't end up spending the full 2 days in prison that she was supposed to. So Sisters Inside are doing great work. Look them up, and if you can spare a bit of cash for their fine-paying crowdfunder, I think it's a GoFundMe, absolutely do that. So, yeah, all in all, like, this is...
A series of very upsetting stories.
Exactly, but there are people doing really good work who are working both within the system and to change the system. And I think it's important to kind of acknowledge that and not just, I guess, not just tell these stories of just sadness and hopelessness, but also to draw attention to the positive things that are happening there as well.
There's another pretty upsetting story that we wanted to talk about as well. A woman named Melody Bruno, who's a Filipina woman, who was a trans woman, was here in Australia for a couple of weeks on holiday, and she was murdered. And the man who killed her has been released on bail. She was in Wagga Wagga, and that's where he's from. And there's sort of not really a whole lot more news about that. The police have been pretty terrible in this situation. They didn't give any information to her family. They've been refusing to give information to the media about it. And there's been quite a lot of sort of news about it, but despite which the information is pretty minimal. And they have actually, the police have established a task force called Strike Force Lamson to investigate the death. It's really sad. Trans people are vastly more likely to be subject to violence and murder than cis people, and especially trans women of color. And this is just a sad story with no real positive there, but we just wanted to acknowledge Melody and her death and give our condolences to her family and hope that some justice will come out of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And on a relatively similar note, last week we talked about Joyce Clark, who was a First Nations woman from in Geraldton in Western Australia, who was murdered by police. There still hasn't been a whole lot more news about this. There's kind of the family still working to get more information, but there has been a crowdfunder going around for her funeral costs, and so far that's raised about $11,000. So the community is kind of coming together around her family, which is good to see. And we just wanted to shout that out. We'll put a link to the fundraiser for her funeral in the show notes for this as well. Cool. So I think it's time to move on to our main course now.
Yeah, what are we having for our main course, Zach?
Just a little school lunch, a little lunchbox. You know, I've got one of those ones that's like insulated. It's got a little Velcro. It's like a little Velcro topped bag. And inside, it's got the like silver stuff that keeps your drink cold.
Mm-hmm.
But after like 3 weeks, you know, you left like a half-eaten apple at the bottom at one stage, and now it just like smells like rotten fruit the whole time, and you can never get the smell out.
Delicious. What is that extensive food a reference to, Zach?
This is the school strikes. The school strike for climate, which happened last week. So we recorded last week midweek, and the strikes happened on Friday, so we didn't get to talk about them last week. So we wanted to shout them out this week and talk a little bit about them. So it happened all over the world, obviously. We kicked it off here in Australia because time zones.
Yep.
And, it was 350,000 people took to the streets.
And something like 4 million worldwide.
Yeah. Biggest day of climate mobilization in history. So
there was a bunch of really good stuff about it. There were some amazing signs and a lot of won't someone please listen to the children? And
yeah, lots of good memes.
A good one like, oh no, that's not smoke, that's steam. ScoMo, the rainforest's on fire. Oh no, Queensland, that's just Aurora Borealis, and so on and so forth. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The kids can definitely meme. Yeah. That's not in question. And they can also turn out in their thousands across the country in order to demand action from our government, which is, I don't know about you, Noon. Well, I do know about you, actually. You do, I know yeah. exactly what we were doing when both of us were 16, and it definitely didn't involve that much political activism.
Speak for yourself. I mean, I went to some stuff about genocide in Darfur and a couple of other things. Yeah, but you're right. Yeah, I was definitely not as politically aware.
I wish I was. Look, maybe it was just that you were only ever smoking weed and pizza and eating pizza when I was around.
Yeah,
and
that's true. You were the bad influence.
You were squeezing in all your activism in between episodes.
On the days that I skipped school. Yeah.
So they had three major demands, the school strikers. First being no new coal, oil, or gas mining projects, including Adani Mine. I think we can all get on board with that.
Yep.
Their second demand was full renewables in Australia by 2030. And nice. Their third demand was a just transition for all workers in fossil fuel industries. So they're really centering, I guess, a pro-worker ethic.
Totally.
Which I think is important, and talking about just transition is important if you are going to make to allow the climate movement to gain the kind of critical mass it's going to need to.
Yeah, definitely.
You know the amount of people that you're going to need, like the biggest resistance you're going to get is from those communities who are dependent on fossil fuel industries. So, and
especially because conservatives use like we need the jobs rhetoric, I think it's super worthwhile pointing out that we can and must be creating employment in renewable energy and in forest regeneration, all the other stuff that we need to do to move to a carbon negative economy. And actually, I would like to recommend everyone look up Beyond Zero Emissions, who are an Australian organization who have basically written a full suite of policies that will be necessary to take Australia to a carbon negative economy. And it's going to require a lot of people putting in a lot of work and getting paid for that. And, you know, all sorts of things from housing insulation to repainting roofs to increase albedo and like...
Gotta love that albedo.
I do. I love talking about albedo. It's a niche topic, but it shouldn't be because it's super fucking important for the survival of the planet. There is space for just transition, and we totally need to center that because we don't want a climate safe economy to come at the expense of people who are currently, you know, working in coal mines and that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, it's kind of the whole point, right? Is that we want to create a better earth that is livable and is fairer,
yeah,
and
good for the people here. Yeah,
yeah, it needs to work for humans as well, and not just, you know, not just us here in Melbourne, even though we did turn out in the biggest numbers of any city in the country, but that's neither here nor there. So I was at the rally in Melbourne, and I saw the speakers, and it was really inspiring to see a lot of First Nations voices and also Pacifica speakers getting platformed. So I think it's really good to see the School Strike for Climate movement tackling head-on a number of criticisms that are being leveled at other climate activist groups in Australia. We've talked before on the podcast about Extinction Rebellion and the way that their central tactic of getting arrested is really excludes First Nations activists and poor
it's
activists
really
and activists of color.
Predicated on people being like middle class and having money and time and feeling more or less safe in police custody and a whole lot of other things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think having an inclusive movement is definitely not one of their main motivations. And I think that from what I've seen, the school strikers are really trying to prioritize that, which I think is really positive.
I also just kind of wanted to address, I put a post up on Auspol Shitposting, our Facebook group, if you didn't catch it on the top of the show, basically feeling very hopeless about the whole situation and like the strikes aren't going to make a huge amount of difference. And I don't know, I guess I still kind of feel that way, but I also feel a bit guilty about feeling that way, or at least for talking about it. Because I, on the one hand, feel like really proud of these kids and super supportive of them taking action, and like clearly no one else is doing it, and like I think it's great that they are trying to do something about it despite not really having any control on the levers of power. But I guess that's really what my feelings are, is that they don't have any control of the levers of power. And you know, I think about, I was a little kid when my parents took me to the march against the Iraq war, which I think a million people went to in Australia, and we still went to war and it didn't make a tiny whit of difference. And, you know, I don't really have any sort of nice conclusion or good take about this, except that I feel like, you know, some people on the page were like, well, yeah, maybe it's not going to change stuff now, but at the next election, a lot of these kids will vote, and maybe they'll vote progressive, and then maybe those progressive government might take some action. And that's a lot of maybes, and it's also like 3 years from now, assuming the Labour Party don't manage to completely fuck up the election, maybe they're going to put some policy in that will make a difference, which isn't really a big hope for me. Like, that, by then it's, We're fucked. We're already fucked, but like by then we'll be like triple fucked. So anyway, that's not really a nice end to that little rant.
No, look, let me push back on it a little bit.
Please, I would love to be convinced otherwise.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that anybody who is engaged with the issue of climate change feels a certain amount of despair and helplessness. That's inherent in the nature of the problem, and also in how slow our progress is at trying to turn around this extractivist economy that is chewing up the earth and spitting it out. So it's natural, and I think it's important to allow yourself to have those feelings and not necessarily feel guilty about them. So that's one thing, just from a kind of like self-care, mental health perspective. You know, those feelings make sense. Yeah. And I think that everybody has them. Everybody who's engaged with them has them to a certain extent. In terms of the strike itself, you know, the mechanism of action of these sort of mass mobilizations is just, it's not immediate. And sure, saying that we have to wait for these kids to become voting age and then they'll take, you know, climate as the number one issue on the agenda to the next election, and then we might see some action. And I understand why that's kind of not only a frustratingly slow mechanism of action, but also an uncertain one. But I think you also have to think about how many people this mobilized. And this will have pulled so many kids up to a level of consciousness about this issue that they wouldn't have had the strikes not happened. Mm. So you're massively expanding your base of people who are informed about the issue and have now taken their first, you know, sort of easiest step into climate activism. They've gone to a thing with their friends. They got to take a day off school. And I know that a number of cynical right-wing people are using this as a talking point of like, oh, the kids don't care, they just want to get off school. But, you know, I think it's a smart idea. It means that there's a low barrier of entry into this style of activism. So you've got, you know, tens of thousands of kids across the country who would not have been involved, overly concerned about this or prioritizing this without the strikes happening. So I think you're massively expanding your base of engaged people for one thing. And then on the other, you make a very good point. We don't have time to rely on electoral politics at this stage to save us. We're way past that, especially in this country. And I think the fact that, you know, even in the week that the strikes were happening, that our prime minister was in the United States and decided not to go to a UN conference on climate change says it all. Mm. Yeah, these people, they don't care. Which is not to say that we should stop applying pressure to them. But I think that something like this is a really important step towards more effective direct action. And I think that we need as many people on board to get the kind of critical mass that this movement needs in order to be effective. And that's only going to happen when by starting at, again, this kind of low barrier of entry, you get people involved. Then they're like, hey, we turned out, like, a solid percentage of the country fucking turned out for these protests and they're still not doing anything. I feel like I probably need to keep talking about this. I feel like I need to keep doing activism about this. And next time, maybe it'll be something more direct. And I think that it's important to see this as like an early step on a road to what might potentially be more directly effective activism as well. Not to see these protests as a kind of an ends of themselves. So I don't know. That's some thoughts.
Yeah.
On that. From
those are all good thoughts. Yeah. I don't really want to list a bunch of depressing statistics as a response to that, because I don't really feel like that's the level on which you were trying to respond. And I think, yeah, you do make some good points about the activating of people as opposed to the strikes as activism in itself. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a discussion that needs to be ongoing, and it's like almost, it's the biggest and most important thing that we can be talking about, and investigating and criticizing our own activism is an important part of that. This is a conversation that I'm sure is going to be ongoing, but I guess, I think it's important to pick out and deliberately emphasize the positives, because the negatives are so fucking overwhelming. I'm not sure that I 100% agree with this, but I saw a tweet the other day that said climate defeatism is as dangerous as climate denialism. I'm not sure that that's like exactly true, but yeah, I do agree
but
with the sentiment.
There's a good point there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess that's what I meant about, that's why I feel guilty about it, because I'm like, well, everyone is kind of feeling a bit of this, and it's not a very productive position to be promoting. Though, I do appreciate what you say about it being important to acknowledge, and like, in order to care for ourselves, that we need to acknowledge that we're feeling that way about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely chat about this further. And if you have thoughts, send in a little bit of audio to the show. We'd love to have listeners submitted rants. Send us an email at ozpolsnackpod@gmail.com. Attach a little bit of audio of you yourself speaking about something for a minute or less. If it's something about, if you've got opinions about the strikes or climate activism in general, or anything about politics in Australia, let us know. Send it in. We'll pop it on the show. That's probably about it for this week. Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. Thanks for the chat, Zach.
Oh, pleasure. And I just want to shout out and give a big thanks to our patrons. We have just made another purchase of gear with your money. So we'll be
doing an unboxing sometime soon.
I know people love the unboxing video. It released the three people who liked it last time. I'm hoping we'll enjoy the next one as well. For those who aren't signed up on our Patreon, $1 a month gets you a monthly bonus episode and also access to our Discord, where we have a nice little community of Ozpol listeners yelling at each other about the party room and other stuff. So that's fun. Come and join us. And if you can't or don't want to support us in that way, it'd be awesome if you could leave us a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Give us the old 5 stars, write a little something about why you like listening to the show, and that'll really help us, because we are doing our darndest to beat out those wet frankfurts from the fucking IPA.
Maybe we should make really crappy videos about our bad opinions.
I can't believe you've never thought of that before. Actually, yeah, I'm going to set up a green screen. We're going to get going tomorrow. I just need to get my fucking Hitler Youth haircut on and we'll be set.
All right, that's us for this week, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, Noon.
Thanks, Zach.
Keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch.